the shot. He scores! William Eklund caps an astounding comeback. The Sharks win it!
You're listening to Morning Tide on the Sharks Audio Network.
Star! Fabian Zetterlund on a one-time pass. Cooks the defense as a kid. Deke shoots. Deke shoots. A spectacular rush from end to end. I mean, Kyle Quinlan.
Now, here's your host, Ted Ramey.
Can you believe this? In overtime, Hedl setting him up for the penalty shot. He had a penalty shot earlier when he made it a member of the Pittsburgh Penguins, and here he goes, this time in overtime. Drew O'Connor moving in, waiting on Vanecek, shoots, and he scores! And Vancouver wins in overtime on a penalty shot by a man who failed in the same exact situation in regulation time just a few days ago. Drew O'Connor wins it for the Canucks 2-1 in overtime.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you can look at it that way. I just think overall there wasn't a whole lot going on. We had some guys block a lot of shots, which is obviously a really good thing. And I don't think we really won a whole lot of, you know, 50-50 battles in the O-zone, so we didn't really create the best opportunities. But I thought when we got our chances, they were really good looks.
All right, what's happening, everybody? We are waking up on a Friday morning on the wrong side of a 2-1 overtime loss. This time, the Sharks seemingly finding new ways to get beat. And this is not a game that they let get away from them. They got beat by Vancouver once again by one goal, but this one was odd. Losing on a penalty shot in overtime. A very, very soft penalty shot, in my opinion. I may be biased, but yes, I did not care for the way that that game ended, and I don't think many of you are happy about it as well. A relatively mild or sleepy game, as called by Tyler Toffoli, and the frustrating part about this one is that the Sharks played 60 minutes of hockey. The game never got away from them. Vancouver didn't score their first goal until well into the third period. If you are a better team and you're not giving up that first goal until you're well into the third period, that should be a game that you win time and time again. 8:04 of the third period is when Dakota Joshua finally finds the breakthrough for the Canucks to make it 1-0. In almost any other timeline for the San Jose Sharks or any other point of their history, I should say, that's a win, especially at home. But right now, they're in the rebuild. They're coming off a very big trade just a few games ago last weekend. They're just not quite there. They don't have the offense. They don't have the firepower. They don't have the ability to take over games. They come out on the wrong side of this one. And the most encouraging thing out of this game is that Vitek Vanecek came back and played really, really well. He looked like he was the guy that we saw on various occasions before he got hurt. And I hope that he continues to play well, because before he went down, he was playing good hockey in front of the net and then took the freak injury and was knocked out for almost 2 months. But now he's back, did not show any signs of rust, and looks ready to go for the remainder of his duration with San Jose. I don't know if that's until the deadline. I don't know if that is until the end of the regular season. I don't know if that is, you know, for how long, because anything can happen, and I think we all have to be aware of that. But Vitek Vanecek looked like he was ready to go, and that was very, very good to see. You hate to see a guy go down with a freak injury, but now he's back, ready to go. So I will take it for San Jose. Tyler Toffoli continues to impress. I have been a huge fan of his throughout his entire career, and just to watch him get the breakthrough for San Jose late in the game, San Jose's running out of time, and once again, he finds the back of the net. That is three straight games with goals, a full four-game point streak, and you know, now he's got 20 goals on the season. He's got 15 assists. He's only missed a small amount of time due to injury. It just feels like whatever he is going to do in any given game, it's going to be consistent. It's going to be productive. It's going to be a guy that leads by example. And that goal that he did score was a great example of how tenacious he is, because his first shot gets denied, second shot gets denied, continues to stay with it, puts a third one in front. It looked like it maybe got knocked around, but it did find the back of the net. And that's just the type of player that he is. He's going to keep coming. And, you know, that's not something that we see too often in the NHL, where a guy gets three chances up front and does find the back of the net. But he is Mr. Consistency. This is why teams have tried to acquire him at the deadline previously. This is why Mike Greer wanted him to come to San Jose. And, you know, he is leading by example for a lot of the young guys. No one else had been able to find the back of the net throughout the entirety of the game, but Tyler Toffoli kept on pushing, and I don't think anyone else had been denied as many times in that game as Tyler Toffoli had been, but he just kept on coming and coming and coming. Eventually, he got one past, and then he found the Sharks into overtime, so a credit to him for just showing that tenacious, unrelenting aspect of his game, and I think that that attitude has to be really something that is absorbed by the rest of San Jose, especially for the rest of this year, while there is still the potential of more change coming until the trade deadline. This was a tough game for Macklin Celebrini in particular, but it's a game that he needs to go through as a player because he needs to see that he can bounce back from it. And, you know, he had one that he put over the glass for a delay of game that led to Vancouver scoring their first goal. That was a mistake. I don't think that that's something that he's really going to see as not necessarily a learning moment, but, you know, he's going to be more careful with the puck next time. I guess that's my grand takeaway from that situation. The puck over the glass happens to anyone, but in that situation, it just led to the, you know, power play where Macklin Celebrini got scored on, and then he was involved on the play and got called for the penalty shot that led to the game winner. So those are two plays where Macklin Celebrini was on the wrong end, and, you know, with Macklin Celebrini this rookie campaign, sometimes he's, you know, doing the backhanded spinorama goal in the first game to get his first National Hockey League goal and everything is hunky-dory. And then in this situation, you see him on the wrong side of two different situations. And that's how it goes. I mean, Macklin Celebrini is not going to find success in every situation. And I've said time and time again that he is learning and figuring out how to play in this league and figuring out what he can get away with, what he can do and what he cannot do. And so last night ultimately was a learning experience for him. I think this is just a game where he's got to be able to just brush it off. He's got to be able to look at the way the game went down and just forget about it. And I think that you've seen guys like Tyler Toffoli forget about it. You've seen, you know, the pros just understand, okay, I just have to forget about what went wrong in this game, find myself on the other side, take care of business, and then get ready for the next game. And I know that sounds very linear, and we often talk about how things in terms of improvement are non-linear, but that's the direct takeaway. I don't think Macklin is, you know, suddenly going to be, you know, cautious with the puck in that situation where he's putting it over the glass. But I think he'll be aware, you know, to a greater extent. And just like, you know, the penalty shot, I think that that's just a weird play. And I think you got to understand that weird plays and bad calls are going to happen. I didn't love a few of those calls in last night's game. Mario Ferraro gets knocked, you know, cross-checked from behind in front of the ref. No call. And then he gets called later. You know, just, I didn't love the officiating, and sometimes the officiating is not going to go your way. That's going to be a consistent factor in the game. So ultimately, the Sharks just have to recognize what they did well in this game and forget about the bad. You know, the goals they gave up, they were on a power play and they were on a penalty shot, I should say. I mean, that if those are the two goals you're giving up through regulation and overtime, you, for the most part, did what you needed to do on defense. It was the offense in this one that was lacking, and I think that sometimes you run into a hot goalie, you got to figure out a way to break through. The Sharks did eventually do that, earning a point out of this one, and they lost in what I won't call a fluky fashion, but something that I don't think any of us really saw coming, nor can you point to that and say, oh, the Sharks did X, Y, and Z wrong, and that cost them the game. Now, there was a call that you didn't love, and then when all was said and done, they ended up on the wrong side of an overtime loss against a team in Vancouver that, you look at their record, is no way indicative of the team that they should have been this year and no way indicative of the talent level that they have. So, you know, San Jose, it's all these tight losses. They lead the league in quote-unquote tight losses, and now this is another example of them not being able to, you know, find their way to the other side. A year from now, if they win half of these quote-unquote tight losses, of which they've been in 24, which is decided by one goal or two goals with an empty netter, that means that they have 24 more points on the table right now. And instead of 15 wins, they have 27 wins. And if you look at that even further, maybe they're winning more than 50% of those games. And maybe they're, you know, winning those tight games consistently. That is the type of growth that you're looking for. This year, we have watched, you know, the team turn from last year where they got blown out very, very consistently into a team that's in all these tight games with the occasional blowout loss, but they've also had a couple of blowout wins. That wasn't really a factor last year. So they've made improvements in that capacity, and now next year they have to figure out how to win these tight games. They have to figure out how to not let the third period be their bugaboo. They have to figure out how to manage these late games, these tight situations. They do that, I think they'll be all right. But again, that comes with more talent, that comes with more experience, that comes with more harsh lessons learned. Let's get into some of the highlights from this game. Vitek Vanacek, in his first performance back in about 2 months, was absolutely phenomenal.
Canucks circle back. Drew O'Connor, acquired from Pittsburgh. Able to flip it forward, gets it to the right, gets a pass back, moving in on a breakaway, shoots one, stick save made by Vanacek off Drew O'Connor. What an opportunity for Vancouver, and a spectacular save by the Sharks netminder as the puck is poked out of play on the rebound.
There was a lot of that on both sides, both Thatcher Demko and Vitek Vanacek making big, big saves. But just over 8 minutes into the third period, we saw Vancouver finally find the breakthrough to take the lead in what had previously been a scoreless affair.
Canucks move in the final seconds of their power play. One more chance maybe. Suter shot. Score! Dakota Joshua in the slot may well have tipped that. It partially deflected, and somehow it gets by Vanacek. The Canucks get on the board off a delay of game over glass penalty to Macklin Celebrini, and it's Vancouver 1, the Sharks nothing.
And then with that 1-0 lead, Thatcher Demko was doing everything to get his team the win.
Sharks have control of it. Celebrini. Oh, nice pass across the ice. An angle shot toward the net by Toffoli, and somehow Demko kept it out of the goal. That's a critical stop at the side of the net with 4:21 to play in the third.
Time and time again, Thatcher Demko had denied San Jose. But finally, Tyler Toffoli with an extra attacker, empty net goal, gives San Jose the goal they've been looking for and sends it to overtime.
They move it out left to right. Celebrini on the attack, gets to the red line, shoots in. Into the right corner it goes, pursuing it. Smith, Zetterlund, they work it free in front of the net. Toffoli has a chance. Backhander save. Rebound. Score! Tyler Toffoli with an effort that is hyper-dimensional. He ties the game 1-1 with a minute 28 to go on the extra attacker on.
A great effort by Tyler Toffoli eventually sends it to overtime for San Jose, where a penalty shot would be awarded to Vancouver, which decided the outcome.
Can you believe this? In overtime, Hedl setting him up for the penalty shot. He had a penalty shot earlier when he made it a member of the Pittsburgh Penguins, and here he goes, this time in overtime. Drew O'Connor moving in, waiting on Vanacek, shoots, and he scores! And Vancouver wins in overtime on a penalty shot by a man who failed in the same exact situation in regulation time just a few days ago. Drew O'Connor wins it for the Canucks 2-1 in overtime.
So the Sharks get a point out of this one, but also a feeling of disappointment, I am sure, as they felt they had a good chance. Let's hear what Ryan Warsawski, the head coach of the Sharks, had to say.
I thought we competed hard. I thought we worked hard. I thought our puck play was a little iffy at times. But I thought we did, you know, enough to win a hockey game, that's for sure. I think we had them for 8 chances, 5-on-5 against. So anytime you keep a team under that 10, you should, you know, win hockey games.
And there's no taking umbrage with those comments. He's right about all those things, and it's unfortunate that it ends the way it did on a penalty shot. He was asked if that was particularly frustrating.
Extremely frustrating.
Short, sweet, and to the point. All right, I've got an interview for you. I spoke with the host of NBC Sports California's Sharks Pre- and Post-Game Live, Alan Hoshida, about a number of topics concerning San Jose. We started on the Granlund CC trade.
Yeah, and there's a couple things I would like to touch on this, so that it might go a little long. But yeah, first and foremost, you get a first-round pick. You got to take that deal. I think you have to take that deal, even though it's Dallas's and it's going to be likely in the bottom 10 of the first round. So that's just – it is what it is. But let's say you want to move up. If you package your second-round pick, that's number top five. Let's just go top five, just conservatively top five. You can move back up into the middle or even higher up in the first round, or you package all that and say, you know, you can do a lot with that pick. Right. I think you have to get it. And then to get unless Dallas goes to the final, it's a fourth round pick. So maybe they go to the final, but I'm hoping for the best, but preparing for the worst. So it's a fourth round pick and you still get something there. And it's for this year. I think the fact that it's for this year is important. The one thing about the McKenzie trade is that second. Oh gosh. Whoa. Everyone calm down. That second round pick they got from Colorado is actually, I think, 2026.
Yeah.
So that's a little unfortunate. But, yeah, to your point, I don't think Mikael Granlund liked San Jose, and yes, they both players had reportedly had interest in coming back to San Jose, but why would you not say that otherwise? Like, why would you? It doesn't do you any good as a free agent or as an unrestricted guy to be like, oh yeah, I don't want to come back here, because then you lose.
No, I don't want your millions of dollars.
Yeah, you know, then your leverage is gone. So I get that people are like, oh, well, they wanted to come back. You can't say otherwise.
Yeah.
Unless you really did, like, unless you really hated it. And by all accounts, San Jose, their franchise and organization do things the right way, whether that's the meals on the trips or have their first class in that situation. So players come here and really like it. So yeah, long-winded, but I think Mikhail, he gets a chance to get a chance to go chase some cups. And at that point in the career, over 30 years old, that's what you want. And I think this was always the plan along with Cody Ceci, is that he would only kind of be here for a few months and they would try to move on from him. And now if you look at this from X's and O's on the ice and in the dressing room, yeah, it hurts. You lose some of your leaders. Mikael Granlund, yes, is the leading scorer on paper, and that's factual. But Macklin Celebrini and Tyler Toffoli are kind of the guys steering the ship right now. So I think it's almost where we could say, yes, Mikael Granlund is your leading point scorer, but is he the most important piece of that offense right now? That's why I push back on that a little bit and say, yeah, if you're on paper, you could say he's the leading point scorer, but is he your most important offensive player? That's because when you say that initially, most points on the team, that's what it kind of it says, is that he's your best offensive player. I don't know if that's necessarily the truth at this point. And then also with Cody Ceci, he was eating up a lot of minutes. He was on that top line. He was doing really good things, leading that core, showing the young guys how to do things. But it's also to note, the defense had struggled here lately. So it wasn't like the group as a whole was getting the job done at a very high level. So you're losing leadership. You're losing guys that had a bunch of experience that could teach the young guys, and hopefully those young guys learned. But also, I think if you look broader picture, you're letting some guys step in, like Thompson, Theron getting a run, Shakir Mukhmudulin. Those guys are going to need to have opportunities. And then on the offensive side, Macklin Celebrini is obviously your best offensive player at this time, and he's 18 years old.
What percentage of the fan base do you think understands that this is what has to be done? I mean, from the perspective of Mike Greer, and I've said this all along, is that he has been making the very tough decisions, and it's probably why the Sharks will inevitably have success, but he is making those decisions that aren't as popular to set up the team for long-term success. If I was a, you know, hard-earned money-spending season ticket holder, and it's not like the people, you know, who are just watching on TV, cable isn't the cheapest thing in the world. None of the, you know, streaming packages are inexpensive, and I'm not trying to, you know, take a shot at our NBC because we know who signs our checks. But the point is, whether you're a season ticket holder, whether you're watching on TV, whether you're just a fan, you're investing time and money. And it's hard to hear sometimes that we're not there over and over. So, I mean, is the Macklin Celebrini and Will Smith developments in front of our eyes and Yaroslav Askarov, is that enough to, you know, make fans feel satisfied for the time being that this is pointed in the right direction?
I think percentage wise, maybe 60 to 70%, 75, maybe understand that. Yeah. I understand this is happening. I don't know if it's like you feel good about it. You can't feel good about it. It is what it is. But you also have to understand, like, asset management and going into the year. And even Greer said in his press conference, ideally, with all the trades he's made so far in season, he would have liked to do them later.
Yeah.
But you can't. You also have to react to what the market is or what people are. So, yes, McKenzie was early, and you pointed it out, and I do think it was a little early as well. But you don't know if in a month that offer is still there.
Right.
So you take it when you can. But ideally, he said he would have liked him to be here a little bit closer to the trade deadline, because we've obviously seen maybe they have a little bit better spot with McKenzie back there. Oh, my gosh. This is going to be a nightmare. What is going on over there?
It's micro earthquakes in the city. We're not feeling them here in Clayton.
Yeah. And then, you know, Granlund and Ceci, another week or two, but you run the risk of this if one of them gets hurt here. So you want to push it a little bit. So you just have to kind of, I think accepting your circumstances in life is a good thing. in a sense where you understand where you are, put your feet where you are, and then understanding that there is something else out there and the team is building something. And Macklin and Will, especially Will, over these last six games or seven games, he didn't have a point last game, but he looked really, really strong. And he's probably playing his best hockey. They're right around their amount of games played for last year when you combine World Juniors and college. And now they're going to get a two-week break to rest those legs. So you can see another pump here, push here through after that. But I think, you know, going into this year, and maybe I was in the minority, I just wanted him to take steps and look more competitive. And if you look inside the numbers, not just at the record, they have been solely way more competitive in games. And there's been Macklin Celebrini has shown that he's going to move this needle with this franchise. Now you got to surround him. And I will keep going back to this. Next year's a big year. If they come back out and they win 25 games again next year or around that number, that's going to hurt. They have to make a jump next year. They have a ton of money, like we talked about. Even before the cap jumped, they had a ton of money. And yes, you don't want to hand out bad contracts just to do it, but you also need to show signs. And now you know what you have in Macklin. You know what you have in Will Smith to a point, maybe not quite to that extent, but you know he's going to be a different maker. Like that power play goal only started because of Will Smith and his patience to find Eklund in the middle, and then everyone did very well. But you have next year. Now, I'm with you, fans. This year it's tough, and you're paying good money, and you want to see a good product. But right now, if you go to games right now, just think to yourself, you're seeing Macklin Celebrini's rookie season. Like, there's something magical about that. You were there from the very beginning. Will Smith, Macklin, Askarov. So, and sporting events are all about experience, right? And that's an experience that no one can take away from you, that you saw Macklin Celebrini before he was Macklin Celebrini, right?
Right? I was just going to say, they are entertaining, if nothing else.
Yeah. So I think that's the way you can look at it. But I will say, I know there's a patience that Greer and the coach, the franchise want to do here. And they're like 2-3 years down the road. And I think if I had my way, and if, you know, anybody asked my opinion, I went up there to the front office and this is going to go. But I think you need to push a little bit next year. I think you can, because I think you have a star player in Macklin. You have another co-star in Will Smith. And if you do look at the numbers, almost 30 close games this year, if they won half of those or 30% of those, this is an entirely different season. So you're going to look and they're going to be bottom five maybe in the league, unless they go really hot here. But they'll be closer to a wild card team than I think people will give them credit.
If we look at Macklin and Will, you were talking about them both, you know, looking really good the other night, Will Smith playing some of his best hockey. I would have expected a wall by now, but to your point, they're both seemingly heating up.
Yeah, and Coach Warsawski said that Macklin was a little, his legs weren't great the road trip before coming home here for a little bit, and that's to expect it. And then Will Smith seemingly has kicked down the wall, and maybe he felt the wall earlier on because we've said it a lot, but they played a lot of hockey as far as their NCAA, World Juniors, and then you're training for your first season and you're doing workouts, and it's just all continuous, continuous, continuous. They probably haven't turned their brain off from hockey for almost a year now, and so hopefully they can do that over the next couple breaks. But yeah, it seems like they're taking a turn here, and they're realizing that they need to keep pushing. And if they could play, you know, 70 games or whatever it's going to be, maybe they get a couple days off. Maybe they might not, because it's only two. They have 2 weeks off here, and then they got to push. But yeah, they've looked really good, and I think as fans, and you've got to be excited about that they haven't looked like they're getting tired. And you know, they're 18 and 19, so you're like, oh, they're not going to get tired. But you go try playing hockey a lot and see how tired. I can't even skate for 5 minutes, so there it is.
And then you also have other young guys like Colin Graf. And Colin Graf, I've told you this many times, I'm a big fan of his game. I love the way that he goes into the corners and gets the puck. His defense is good. You know, he's out there on the kill now, and he played for a couple of weeks with the Sharks, went back down, and it seems like when he was up the other night, he looked so much more confident and so much more just aware of what his responsibilities were. And when he did get those looks, I mean, he had a no-doubter. That snipe that he did for his first NHL goal was great. He had a couple other good looks that required some saves. I mean, that's more in line with what I've been seeing in terms of the potential of Graf. And that's, you know, if you're Mike Greer, you're saying, I got that guy undrafted at the end of last year. He chose to come here. Now he's part of our system. This is another young player. And we haven't even seen, you know, the Dickinsons and the Musties at this level yet. And there's, a huge number of guys who are really talented with the Barracuda right now. I mean, it is shaping up nicely. And I don't know if I sent it to you, but there was a tweet that came out the other day that said, you know, look at what the Sharks have coming up. Look at all their picks. Look at all their cap space. Look at this young talent. There is no team that is better situated to win multiple cups in the relatively near future. And Mike Greer, he's like, people are recognizing what's happening here, Alan. Like, that's the thing, is like, it's a down year. They've got 15 wins, but the rest of the league is kind of starting to open their eyes and go, San Jose is about to be extremely dangerous.
Yeah, I think when you talk about Graf really quick, he looked way more assertive. And he said in postgame that that's what the Sharks wanted, him to be a little more offensive. And Dan Boyle said something on pregame and postgame that I think is interesting, and a great point is when you're coming up, or you always want to play within the constructs of the team. You want to play 5-on-5, but you also want to do something special, because if you don't, then you're going back down to the Barracuda, right? Like, it's one thing you can, because if you just play within the game or within the team, you're not doing anything out of the ordinary that would keep you in your spot, right? So it's about showing that you can do everything that the team asks you, but also be special. And I think that's what Graf did last game, is that he did everything that the team asked him for, but then he also, on top of that, was pretty assertive offensively and showed that he maybe has a little bit more than, you know, someone else that could be in that spot. So I think that's a great point to have, is that when you come up and have your opportunity, if you just play meekly as what the team wants you to, because he wasn't bad when he was up the 2 weeks, he just was there, right? Like, he just was, but he wasn't special either. And I think last game showed that, this could be his special. This is something special about his trait, that he is tenacious and that he does have, that shot was outstanding. So such to graph. Snipe. Yeah. So if he could keep doing that, I think that was a great point. And something I think we can keep an eye on is for guys that come up, is if they're doing anything that the teams ask you, that's great. But then what else are you doing?
Right.
Like with Podorowski, what else are you going to do? What else are you going to show? And I think that's good to look at. And now with the bigger picture, I think the league's on notice. I think the league knows that the 15 wins, yes, they're 15 mirage. Wins. And you are what you are. But it's a bit of a mirage, because if they won half of their close games, they're not even close to the bottom. They're set up way better. They have way more cap space. Macklin Celebrini seems a lot happier than the number one overall pick from a year ago. And they have all these guys. You're looking at Dickinson. You got Musty. You got Bisted, Haltonen, Kenyoni. And then you have you have two first-round picks. And then you have Igor Chernyshov, who's just starting to come back. And he looks like a dominant player. The thing is, when you're looking at prospect pools, if the guys that you're talking about are not the best players in their leagues respectively, they're not going to be very good in the NHL. I shouldn't say they're not going to be, because we've all seen exceptions to the rule, but you have to dominate at every level if you're going to be a contributing NHL player. And I'm not even saying like a superstar NHL player. You have to be a dominant player of juniors or the AHL to be a contributing NHL player. And then it's another whole thing to be a superstar. But it seems like what San Jose is building, every one of their prospects, their high-end prospects, are guys that are dominating in their leagues.
Yeah. To hear the first few minutes of that interview, listen to yesterday's edition of The Build-Up, where you can also hear an interview with Jack Thompson. But we are just about out of time. The San Jose Sharks have one more game before the break. That is coming up on Saturday night, 7 o'clock go time, hosting the Dallas Stars, where they immediately get to reunite with their former teammates, Mikhail Granlund and Cody Ceci, who now find themselves in the Lone Star State. But for this game, they are back in San Jose with their old team, taking on San Jose. So again, 6:30 pregame, 7 o'clock go time on Saturday night as the Sharks host the Stars. Catch it right here on the Sharks Audio Network. For the San Jose Sharks, I'm Ted Ramey, signing off.
This podcast can be found on demand anytime on the Sharks Plus SAP Center app. All music by Yogi Yen.